McAllister still going strongly in the closing minutes.
Great run by Kevin McAllister! What a goal that is!
Delivery's good, there's Hagen. Now McGrath, he scored!
It's Stokes on a hat-trick! Goal number three for Anthony Stokes.
Alston saw off Robertson and delivered! Sidibe scores! That's the goal! That's the moment! Samuel off and running again. Is it going to be the hat trick? You know it is.
What has happened to it all? Crazy, some would say. Where is that life that I recognise? Gone away. But I won't cry for yesterday. There's an ordinary world. Somehow I have to find. And as I try to make my way to the ordinary world, I will learn to survive. Those, my friends, are the words I heard echo around the Hydro on Tuesday night after I chose to go and see Duran Duran instead of Falkirk versus Airdrie in the first leg of the playoff. And never have I made a better choice in my life. And never has there been a more appropriate song as I constantly updated my phone looking at score. 1-0, 2-0, 3-0, 4-0, 5-0. Until I saw a team, my team, had been beaten 6-2 from Airdrie. 6-2. Unbelievable. Then cue another song come Saturday. Toka's Dream. Are you aware of that one, Lewis?
New one? No.
I Need a Miracle. It's a dance track from the early noughties.
Miracle.
Yeah, so we needed that. We marched on to Saturday, but we needed effort. Perhaps we should have renamed it, I Need Some Effort. I Need Some Effort. Perhaps that's what it should have been called, because after that display, it can only be described as one word and one word only. Pathetic. Welcome to Falkirk Daft. I'm John McInally, and we're definitely going to have to push the expletive button on this week's episode, so I apologise for the language, what you're about to hear on this podcast. But seriously, what the actual fuck? Let's see if we can answer that over the next wee while. Once again, you've just heard, I am joined by my friend, the voice of Falkirk Television, Lewis Connolly. How are you, Lewis?
Had better weeks, mate. I think safe to say you had a more enjoyable night than we did that day.
Oh, I mean, we're getting pumped 5-0 by the time Rio came on. I just went, fuck that. Go to the bar, get a couple of pints and dance along to some 80s new romantic music. It was great. Shout out to our friend Ross. He's not been able to do it for family reasons for the last couple of weeks. So thoughts with him and his family at the moment. And shout out to his dad as well, who listens to this podcast as well. So, he'll be back. We've got big plans, which we'll go on to a bit later on in the podcast. But yeah, it's just, we sat here, I think, about a month and a half ago, Lewis, and we were on the precipice of one of our best seasons of all time, potential of the Scottish Cup final, potentially getting winning promotion back up to the Championship. And look where we are now. We are sitting here on Monday, the 15th of May. We are out of the playoffs. And listen, all credit to Airdrie. They deserve to be there. They absolutely 100% to be there. They bossed us. They absolutely. I have never seen, and Lewis, I think you made a remark to John McGowan, a worse 45 minutes of football. I wasn't there. I didn't see it. But I couldn't even bring myself to watch the highlights of that game. Couldn't even bring myself to watch it until today.
Literally.
I know I need to do it ahead of this podcast. I need to put myself through the fucking pain. So I sat down, watched 45 minutes of it, and it was fucking painful. Absolutely painful. There's not been a worse 45 minutes in Falkirk's history. You know, if you can, maybe you can throw me one. Maybe some of the older boys can flag something up. But I don't think in a massive game that counted for absolutely everything, there has been a worse 45 minutes. And I'm sure there's Dunfermline supporters and Airdrie supporters lapping this up as we speak. But this is our club, right? This is our club. And it's just open. You know, I went through the grief process. I've skipped over angry. I'm fucking back to angry now, especially after Saturday. How you feeling, Lewis?
Pretty pish, to be honest with you. I'd hoped for a bit of fight, a bit of dig, a bit of passion on Saturday. I was never realistically thinking we were going to overturn a four-goal deficit. You know, you have that tiny little glimmer of hope that every fan of every club would have. Well, if you get the first goal, you never know. But realistically, four goals down going into it, didn't expect much, John. The most disappointing thing for me, twofold, was I wanted a little bit of pride back for the fans.
Yep.
Didn't he get that? And just secondly, you know, you look for me, in adversity, things go against you in football. Happens to every team, every club at some point or another. One of the things I like to see is a wee bit of character in the face of adversity. And sadly, we just didn't get that at all. You know, you're looking for a wee bit of leadership, boys to step up. You know, I was brought up and I was spoiled. Looking back at it now, I grew up with guys like Neil Oliver, like Scott McKenzie, who, don't get me wrong, they would give you their best every single game. Some games, it was enough. Some games, it wasn't enough. But by God, even in the games when it wasn't enough, they let the opposition know they'd been in a game. And didn't they necessarily see that on Saturday?
Airdrie walked away from that game.
Certain people, at least.
Airdrie walked away from that Saturday. They had not been in a game at all. Absolutely. Listen, we're going to get into the game, the games in a minute, because there's a lot to talk about, you know, as the volcano erupts further. But we've just got a couple of things, kind of a bit of admin issues to go through. Dougie has been in touch with the podcast. Thanks, Dougie. He's involved in the fans and training program down at Falkirk. He says, firstly, thanks for the PR that you've been providing us so far across the season. Friday is the day of the Lava Cup, which is Friday the 19th of May, which is happening. It's in aid of Scottish Cerebral Palsy Football Team. So we'll give it a shout out. It's teams from all over the place that are taking part in this. It's happened down at Newton Park in Bowness. I don't know the actual time of it, but it's going to be happening down there this Friday. Lots of teams involved. Hibs, Northern Ireland Vets, the Falkirk Foundation, obviously. Berwick Rangers Seniors, Dunfermline are involved in it. Orkney Islands are coming down for it as well. Amazing. Aberdeen. Teams from Iceland in there as well. It's going to be a great day, raising money for a great cause. So if you can get down to the International Lava Cup down at Newton Park in Bowness this Friday, I'm sure the guys would support that. I'm sure it's going to be a hell of a night out with all those teams as well.
Well, they went over, there's about 12 teams in it. Dougie had contacted me, I gave them a little shout out on Falkirk TV at the weekend. The guys actually went to represent the club up in Iceland a month or two ago, and this is kind of the return fixture and the return tournament, so I hope they all do well.
Brilliant, brilliant. Well, so well done. Hopefully you get raised a bit of money for Cerebral Palsy in that tournament. Thanks, Dougie. Let's just, you know, we've been short, a bit short in Cob News. Well, I'm saying that, I've not checked Twitter. Is McGlynn gone or not? I don't know. We'll check.
We'll change.
We'll keep an eye on it as the progress. And we're going to get into that a bit later on as well, just where he should stay or should he go. Thanks, I have to say, to our loan players who obviously have now went back to their parents' club. Kai Kennedy, bit more on him later on. Brian Kinnear, Matty Wright, Max Kucheriavke, Blaine Rowe, they all went back to their parents' clubs after Severance Falkirk. Looking down that list, Lewis, any you would like to have held on to?
I mean, I think some of the guys did well. In fact, to be fair, most of the loanees did okay. Mm-hmm. Brian in goals, I think he had a good game in that first game at Airdrie, but then kind of struggled to recreate that.
I wouldn't have kept Brian on.
I would, and I don't mean that to be nasty to him. I wouldn't be devastated if he signed, but equally I wouldn't be breaking the bank to go and get him, put it that way. I think there's other keepers out there who could do easily as well. I think, you know, Kai had glimpses, and I think
certainly January onwards.
Towards the end, he really started to, once he got beyond that initial hernia, that stomach hernia that he had, he started to show glimpses of what he could do. I think Max was probably the pick of the bunch for me. Yeah. The reality is,
nah, he's levels above us.
I think if you're St Johnstone, realistically, having had him at Kelty, having had him at us, his next step should be the Championship if they wanted to loan him out again.
I think they'll look at him for the first team, if I'm honest with you.
Maybe.
I think they'll look at him as a squad player for next season, because he's proved, and like us, going back to Saturday, one of the few players on that park who put dig in. I mean, he was blown out of his arse, I think, by and you know, probably our better, one of our better players in the park on Saturday. So a player that put in a lot of shifts. So you know, I loved him at Falkirk, but I think that's beyond us, absolutely beyond us,
totally beyond us. I think you're right. Don't get me wrong. If he did come back, I would be delighted. I think Max was the best loanee we had. I think Blaine over the piece did a really solid job for us. I would have Blaine back.
Yeah.
I think that he tailed off in a couple of games just before he was dropped, but that was, for me, partly because of that hamstring injury that was coming on and partly because he's a young player. What is he, 20? Just turned 21. And he was playing, you know, week in, week out, which is great, you know, that he was getting that experience. But sometimes young players, you just need to give them the odd week off just to kind of keep them fresh. But yeah, I would take Blaine back if the option was there. Matty, I mean, he got his goal at the end up at Peterhead. I don't think it was as productive as he would have wanted it to be. So again, I think he falls into the probably the same camp as Brian for me in terms of I wouldn't be rushing to bring them back unless we were struggling for options.
Yeah, it's just, you know, my assessment, Kai would have been, again, he's probably championship. Well, I think Kai Kennedy will end up a team in the championship. Yeah. I don't know if I'd heard Queen's Park maybe, but I don't know if that.
Didn't hear that one, but I think he'll have options.
Yeah, he'll definitely have options in the championship. Matty Wright, well, Rossi's favourite player, but he obviously got his goal against Peterhead. Who knows? Maybe if he started as a two with Jordan Allen, we might have had a pair in our hand. But for me, just, you know, for a player that came as, you know, top scorer from Montrose, you know, he scored against Rangers, what have you. He just, you know, I don't think he did enough, and he always looked a bit out of place for me. Max, I think, you know, Wayno named him the new Russell Latapy. What a boy. Love to have him. Absolutely love him. Again, I think he's about two levels above us, and I think he'll go on to have a really good career, Matro. And Blaine, like you say, just steady Eddie, did what he had to do at right back. And yeah, sad to see him go. Actually, on his Twitter, Blaine actually said, thank you to everyone at Falkirk for the really enjoyable time I had and for making me feel so welcome. I have had some great memories and met some top people. So thanks for all the guys' efforts there. I don't think we'll see any of them back next season for various reasons. However, who we will see next season is Alfredo Aguiman has agreed to join the club next season in a pre-contract after moving on from Kelly Hearts. Now, we all know about the big man because he absolutely, in that game was at October, he absolutely tore us a new one going down that side. I didn't realise he spent most of his youth career in Italy, which was amazing. He was brought up in Italy, born in Ghana. Brought up in Italy and then moved to Scotland. He was in Motherwell before joining East Kilbride and Queen's Park and BSC Glasgow and then Kelty. And as we saw, he's only 23 years old as well. Big lad, strong, you know, fast. Surprising turn of pace for a big lad. Where do you think he'll feature next season? I mean, it depends on what we play, Lewis. But
if you're playing 4-2-3-1, John, he's probably wide lefty or three in behind the out and out striker.
Do you think he would be wasted out? I mean, that's where he did the damage against us.
I'm old school, right?
Him up top with Jordan Allen for me.
Two, right? Yep. Or at least a 5-3-2. I would always go two up top. That's just personal preference. I'm a bit old school that way. I prefer two strikers and one. But if you are sticking with the 4-2-3-1 formation, I mean, a lot of the time at Kelty this year, he didn't actually play as the out-and-out striker. He was the one on the left side. So it was Cardell, Higginbotham and him, you know, rotating, but usually in behind the striker. So a lot of the time he can actually operate on the left side of a front three or kind of attacking left midfield, if you like. But he is capable of playing through the middle as well. The one thing I think he does, and you touched on it a moment ago, is he's going to give us a little bit of physicality, which is something I think we really lack this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one of the reasons that we put Liam Henderson up into midfield to help Stephen McGinn out a bit, because respectfully, we have a few creative players in and around Stephen McGinn. But when it came down to a physical battle, we saw some of the guys just getting out muscled because of size and shape. Alfredo coming in, he looks like he will have a bit more of a physical presence about him. And as I say, I think that's needed, because I would be looking to put Liam Henderson back to left centre half next year. That's why we brought him in. That's why the manager signed him. Most importantly, that's where Liam wants to play.
Okay.
I asked Liam directly. He says he's a centre half. That's where he would want to play. That was on the, I think it was the club podcast earlier this season. That's public information. Let's happily talk about it. But I think he's done well in midfield. He gave us a physical presence. But I would rather put, like, you know, square pegs in square holes and round pegs in round holes, and not any mixture of the two. Let's put Liam back to where he belongs and where he wants to be.
Yeah, okay.
In his natural position. And then let's just go and get a box-to-box midfielder.
Scrapper.
With a bit about him.
Let's Paddy Craig, a Max Kacheriavke, a player like
that. Paddy Craig or a Davy Nicholls. One of the two. Go and find them. I don't believe there's no someone out there who can do that job for us.
Absolutely. You asked John on Saturday, or John alluded to in his interview on Saturday, Lewis, that they're very close to getting someone on a pre-contract. You might have more information on this, but the rumours around the stadium was that Max Crocum from Grimsby, a New Zealand international goalkeeper, 6'4".
So not a name I've heard mentioned around the club at all. Now, that doesn't mean it's not happening. I've seen the online rumour just today, mainly. Was the first time I'd heard it, but certainly not a name I've heard mentioned around the club. The only thing I would say is, when people are saying New Zealand international, just to be clear, he got two caps.
They all count, Lewis, and it was in friendlies. I know it was in friendlies.
Caps, friendlies, and after getting those two in quick succession, hasn't played again for a full 5 years. So...
Yeah, well, that is the rumour that was doing the round the stadium on Saturday. The other one I've heard is Jamie McDonald, but I don't know how concrete that is. Obviously, there's a relationship there with Raith Rovers.
On Twitter, but I don't see why that one would happen. I'm not saying it can't, but I would find that a bit of an odd one. I get the fact people will say, well, oh, John McGlynn knows him because John McGlynn was at Raith Rovers. But again, if you're Jamie McDonald, unless Raith are consciously offloading you, then you're at the championship level, probably on a little bit more money. You are playing. Why? Yeah. I think that's a bit of an odd one for me. I wouldn't put too much credence in it, but who knows?
Yeah, we'll wait and see with that one. But certainly it looks like there's the wheels are in motion for signs coming in the next wee while. You know, just check Twitter again. John is still here. So that will we'll see how that goes in the next time in terms of recruitment. Let's get into the games though. Fuck, do we have to? Right, Airdrie 6, Falkirk 2.
Pish.
Let's go back to last Tuesday. Pish.
You're gonna have to summarize it. Pish. There you go. That's it. Move on.
Oliver and Mackay were the only ones keeping their places from the game against Peterhead. We sat on this podcast last week, Lewis, and we talked formations. We talked about playing the diamond. We said if Morrison was fit, they should go for the 4-3-3 with maybe an Oliver and an experienced striker. Get it back to the stadium, maybe a 1-0, maybe try and scrape a 1-1, 0-0, whatever we do. He got it all wrong with the formation, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I asked the manager after the game if he felt that the shape had contributed and if he felt he should have changed it sooner. And he, in his opinion, it wasn't the shape. But, I mean, he will know the game infinitely better than me. But personal opinion, I do not think the diamond worked. And I just think that the one team you can't play a diamond against in that league, ironically, the diamond. And it's because they usually set up with the front three. They have Gallagher up front and they have McGill and Smith either side of them. And I just think you're then giving McGill and Smith like free rein down the wide areas. And so you play the diamond and, you know, respectfully, you look at the exact makeup of the diamond we played. We're playing Liam Henderson as a left of a diamond and Aidan Nesbitt, who's left-sided, on the right of the diamond. So I'll go back to my previous point about, you know, square pegs and round holes and all the rest of it. Now, I get that some people will say, well, technically it's not really left wing that Hendo's covering, but he's playing left centre mid because it was a narrow diamond. But if you've got And then sometimes he changed during the game. So whether it was McGill or Smith hanking it down that touchline in acres of space, Hendo is respectfully going to have to go out there to shut that down. And all of a sudden, you've got the big man who's a centre half by trade, helping you out in midfield and doing a decent job, I have to say, but he's now playing on the left touchline. Nah, it's just not going to happen
for me. I mean, he's tried it a couple of times. He's kind of balls into the back post through Hendo, and it's maybe worked like once, but it's been a constant thing in trying to get these balls into the back post. And you saw on Saturday, you saw on last Tuesday, the amount of times that John McGlynn's come out in his post-match interview, Liam Henderson had a couple of good headers that he could have scored from. It hasn't, and it's not been working, so why persist with it? The formation for me was all wrong. You know, I wasn't there. Like I say, I was partying away to Duran, but just even watching the highlights there on Falcon TV and reading what everyone's been saying, and what we talked about on this podcast last week, you don't go in that diamond, like you say, against Airdrie because of their strengths. You know, again, we talked about was McCann targeted? Because obviously that's been an area that Airdrie have kind of over the season.
If you look back over the last couple of years as Leon McCann joined, John, there's been a real theme of every single Airdrie game. So because they know him more than most, Leon's a good player. I think he's, on the record, I think he's one of our best players this season. Yeah. I think that what they were always worried about was Leon's height. Now, Leon, actually, for the height of him,
he's got a good leap on him.
Doesn't lose many high balls, exactly. Yeah. He's got a good leap on him. But what teams see is he loves to attack, right? He's decent at defence, but he loves overlapping, and everyone knows it. So what they do is they put the ball out to left midfield, so whether either their left back advances or it's a winger, whatever it is, mm-hmm. and they play a long diagonal trying to get over the top of Leon McCann. Now, Airdrie do that more than any other team because we got him from Airdrie, so they know him better than anyone else.
Yeah.
But if you watch that, that is a conscious tactic that teams have used against us for 2 years now. And I think that's one of the reasons Leon's height, is why Sean Mackey was signed. Because there was that perceived vulnerability that Leon had, by his own admission, a kind of average year last year. And the worry was that the manager saw that as a weakness and thought, I'm going to address it straight away. Now, to be fair to him, Leon, off camera up at Dundee, when I had a wee chat with him, I said, I thought, you know, you're here because you did really well tonight, and we hadn't spoken to you in a little while as well. But one of the things came up when we were chatting was, I said, it seems like since Sean Mackey signed, you've actually taken your game up to another level. And Leon was saying, well, yeah, that's the whole idea. I'll kind of paraphrase to keep it clean, but he said basically he wasn't giving up his jersey without a bit of a fight, shall we say.
It's okay, we're swearing on this episode, Lewis. You swear all you want. This is getting the expletive E put right next to it. So let's go into the game then, right? 6 minutes, they should have scored, right? They hit the bar.
Yep.
Then, on the highlights, you and Stuart are still talking about how we've been so weak through the middle, how everything's went through the middle. That's been our weakness all season. And then they fucking go up the middle and they score. Yep. It was unbelievable.
And that's the one thing. If you're playing a narrow diamond and you know you're going to get tanked down the wings with McGill and Smith, the one thing you have to be sure about is that you're solid in the middle. But if you've nobody out wide and you're weak in the middle, then you're onto a humping before the ball's kicked. And sadly, it's just right down the middle.
So there we're 1-0, 7 minutes gone. I'm going, fuck's sake. 11 minutes late, 3 or 4 minutes later, free kick, sloppy free kick, given away at the edge of the box. No need for it to be given away where it was. Wall gets lined up. Now, who's at fault here? Is it Romain Borrell for fucking shiting it and jumping out the way and leaving a gap? Or is it for Brian Kinnear for not lining up that wall properly?
The one thing,
one of them. It's one of these.
Aye. I think the way the wall was lined up, to be fair, keepers fall into one of two brackets. Some of them stay very central and they're gambling on the way they think it will go. If it goes the opposite, then they get a huge amount of stick. Or more traditionally, a keeper will look after one side of the goal and let the wall look after the other. And I know people will say, well, even if you're looking after like the right-hand side, don't go too far right just in case. But at the end of the day, the keeper can't do everything. I think the wall was actually lined up pretty well, John.
Right.
McCabe couldn't and didn't hurl it round the wall. Had he put it wide off the last man, it was going beyond the goal. What happened, as you say, was unfortunately the person on the end of the ball didn't, not only did they jump, they didn't even jump straight up. They've jumped diagonally out of the side, and the ball has gone right through where that individual was. Do you know what, Brian Kinnear, the last few weeks he's not had the results he would have wanted, but I don't think you can blame him for that second goal when somebody jumps out the wall.
Right. 11 minutes gone, 2-0 down. 15 minutes gone or 16 minutes gone, 3-0 down. The fucking Brad Mackay mix-up show. Fantastic. Ball comes back out of midfield. Mackay and Williamson don't know what the fuck they're doing. The boy just runs in and scores. Fucking believable.
Communication, and sadly we saw that.
Have these boys ever played with, I mean, let's go, we'll talk about Saturday's game in a minute, but have these boys actually played with each other? It doesn't seem like, from that 45 minutes, it seems like they were strangers meeting for the first time on a football park.
And this is a problem, again, about to go back to what I said earlier in terms of a wee bit of leadership and adversity, a bit of character. And sometimes, at points this season, it has been sadly lacking.
At that point, 3-0 down with 15 minutes to go, if I was John McGlynn, I would be going, let's fucking change this because this is 3-0 and we need to start doing something here. But yeah. Oh no, we continue, we persist. 30 minutes gone. A free header in the box for Taylor Sinclair. Free header.
Literally unmarked.
No one standing around him. No one standing around him. Fuck knows who's meant to be, but there was no one there.
I am not a fan of Zonal. I never have.
It can get in the fucking bin, and we've been doing it. We've been it all season from corners. It has been Zonal marking, and it can get in the bin. Go man to man. And it's not worked all season. That's been a big threat. I'd like to see actually the stats of how many goals we've lost for corners and crosses and set pieces, because we've lost a lot. And it started at day dot against Kilmarnock in that friendly at the stadium, the first game when we're playing, opening the Ken McAllister stand. That's when it started, and you saw right then, hold on a minute, it was like we lost about 3 goals from corners that night. And yet we persisted with it. That needs to change. That needs to change.
Yeah, the zonal defending, for me, I'm just not a fan of it. I never have been. I probably never will be. Again, I'm showing my age. I'm a grumpy old man. I don't like it. Just mark your man. Do what you have to do. Don't mark an area. And at the end of the day, sometimes, as we've seen, if you're zonal, unless your communication is absolutely spot on, you're susceptible to a man going between the two of you. Of course. As Aaron Taylor-Sinclair gloriously did, as he just marched right through the middle of your defence, mm-hmm, and bodied it into the empty net.
4-0 at 30 minutes. Fantastic. Duran, we're on to Hungry Like the Wolf by this point. Fordyce then steps up in the 40th minute, again from a corner, again from zonal marking. Didn't have a clue. 5-0 at half time.
Yeah, chocolate at that point. Really was.
So, what's 45 minutes?
I know I said it to the manager at the time, and you know, one of the criticisms you get online doing what I've done over the years is, oh, be tough on the manager and the interviews and all the rest of it. And, you know, I don't think when you're standing there face-to-face with any manager, looking them right in the eye, saying you've been watching the team for, you know, about 30-odd years and you can't think of a worse 45-minute performance, I don't really think you can be much tougher on them than that to lay it right on the line.
He deflected from it, Lewis. He deflected from it. You know, we made a lot of defence. I mean, he went back to defence. Absolutely, it was a defence problem. But that's, again, and you talked about shape as well in your interview as well. He says nothing to do with the shape. I'm sorry, John. I'm sorry. Stevie Wonder can see that it was something to do with the shape in that first half.
And I have some degree of sympathy in terms of Cal Morrison was definitely injured. He barely was, you know, had enough of them to make the bench. And I get the fact, if you're playing a 4-2-3-1 and one of your wide players in that three are out.
What was Morrison? Yeah. Was Morrison generally couldn't make it then? Because he was injured.
He had an injury. Yeah.
Right.
So there's no way he could have started that game. Well, it's my understanding. Right,
okay.
So from that point of view, from any manager's point of view, you're thinking, right, if I don't have a direct replacement, and that's one thing arguably we don't have, is a like-for-like from Morrison on the right side,
yeah,
you'd be looking at potentially playing Craig McGuffey on the opposite side, which he did a couple of games this year. Mm-hmm. But obviously Guff is definitely left-sided. And he's not quite as direct as Cal Morrison is, but very few are in the squad. The one that I can't help but feel, and it's great with hindsight, right? I get that. Somebody will say, oh, well, it's easy to sit here and be Pep Guardiola after a game's done.
Yeah, I mean, we're not football managers, no.
Correct. And everyone's an armchair manager, you know what I mean? But I can't help but feel, had we gone 4-2-3-1, while we may still have lost the game, we certainly still would have been in the game for Saturday. Because to me, you don't lose six goals if you go 4-2-3-1. And the only one that I'm kind of looking back at now going, I know this is a bit of a renegade shout, and I'll take whatever grief folk want to give me. I'm fine with that. What about Ola Lawal?
Well,
why could you not have taken a punt for 60, 65 minutes even on Ola Lawal?
Yep.
In that wide right area.
Because he obviously scored, he played, was probably man of the match the week before as well.
And I know he likes to play more central. I get it. He's not a natural winger, but he's comfortable running with the ball.
And he's a maverick.
Go past men. Yeah, he's got that wee bit of kind of renegade creativity about him. I just look at it and go, could we have taken a punt on Ola?
Yeah, no, I feel good. So we come back out second half. We changed the shape around eventually. We get back in it. Well, say get back in it at five. We get a goal 5-1. Donaldson manages to tap it in. And then it goes 5-2 with the keeper being sent off at that point. Ray getting sent off, which was a queer sending off, clearly. You know, Burrow was going to go through. Boy just stuck his hand, and then it's a clear sending off. And from that resulting free kick, suddenly it's 5-2. A wee cheeky deflection. Kai Kennedy haunting Airdrie again. And then you're thinking, right, hold on a minute. If we push on here and get 5-3, we have got a chance come Saturday. We've got a chance of taking it to extra time. We've got a chance of, you know, if we turn up, you know, going 3-0 and taking, going through. But when through me, Lewis, at 5-2, when we're up and by a man as well, how was the urgency? How did we go at Airdrie?
The trouble for me, John, actually was after the second goal and a slight change in personnel and all the rest of it, it almost seemed to take the sting out of our play a little bit. You know, for about a 10-15-minute spell, we started causing Airdrie problems using the spare man. We got the couple of goals that you mentioned. But then actually it's like that new kind of energy, that buzz that all of a sudden we had and have been missing all game, it just kind of faded away. And that for me was probably, other than the shambles of a first half, that was the most disappointing part in the second half for me. Because, as you say, two goals are now in the net. I know it's difficult, but they're playing against 10 men. Go and get that extra one goal, as you say. Two, brilliant, but even go and get one and take it down to the equivalent of a 2-0.
At 11 against 10, you should be... Because Airdrie at that point presumably shifted into just backs behind the wall, put men behind the ball. I'm sure they made subs.
Well, to be fair.
Yeah.
And they defended Fordyce, I have to say, in both legs. Callum Fordyce will happily eat up all the high balls you'll give him.
No, absolutely.
So why play to his strength?
Yep. Then, to compound the matters, you know, even at 5-2, you're thinking, right, we've got a chance of maybe taking it the extra time if we turn up at the stadium. But at 6-2, ridiculous. You know, Airdrie trying to take the ball into the corner. Then you see, again, through the middle. What a shock. Through the middle of the park. Spare men. And there we go. Penalty given away. Leon gives away a penalty. And then McCabe steps up and it's fucking 6-2. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yep. And that's the one that we absolutely killed it. Three goals is very, very unlikely anyway.
Yeah.
As soon as it goes four, I think as a football fan, you know that's the point, you forget it.
Games are both.
Barring some miracle, it's now gone as soon as a fourth goal goes in.
And that's when we started singing Fragma come Saturday when we walked into the stadium going, I need a miracle, I need a miracle. And then I started singing Hot Chocolate, I Believe in Miracles. Then you came along, you sexy thing. I sang that to you, Lewis. So we wandered into the stadium on Saturday. I mean, fair play, and applause to the Falkirk supporters who had already clearly bought a ticket for the match. But they turned up, they tried to create an atmosphere, they tried to motivate the team. You know, where there was changes, obvious changes to be made. PG Morrison, Finn Yeats, Max coming in, Cal Morrison and Sean Mackey coming in. Probably the right changes made. For me, though, and it's going back to this, I think in a game like that, you put Lowell in. Again, a maverick, don't know what it's got to do, and you just put him, and Airdrie wouldn't know. But he didn't play great when he came on, in fairness. But why the fuck not? Why not? Put him in. Airdrie won't know what to do with him. Because I don't know what you do with him. You just look at him and go, where's he going to go next? What's he going to do? You know, so a change, is that the changes you would have made? I guess Kinnear going out is just, he's lost six goals. So
I think he had to. I think his confidence was shot. You know, you look back at his last couple of games, Hampden as well, he'd lost 9 goals in the space of a couple of games. Yeah, I think it was the right decision to replace Brian with PJ on Saturday. I genuinely do. Finn coming in was injury related.
Fucking what a shock horror. Ryan Williams said injured. Wow, what a shock.
And of course, Blaine had that hamstring injury that's kept him out for about 3 weeks now.
Yeah.
So Finn by default was the only guy.
And by the way, the only player, well, one of probably only two players in that park who got pass marks on Saturday.
I thought he did well.
Finn, absolute heart of a lion. I could see, I watched Finn walk off that part and it looked like he was in tears. He looked fucking raging. The only one that showed real heart, him and Max, for me, were the only one that looked as if they gave a fuck. And yeah, that's Max criminal. That is absolutely criminal.
So Max was the best on the pitch for me. And I think you're right. I think I was impressed by Finn on Saturday. I thought he did really well. And don't get me wrong, overall, I think better shape, better formation, better personnel. There was a wee bit of buzz that there wasn't on the Tuesday. The disappointment for me from Saturday was, this is a team that knows they have to go out and score 4 goals, right? You have to just take all the shackles off, lift all the anchors, and just go for it for 90 minutes. Get that first goal and see where it takes you. And knowing that you have to score 4 or you're eliminated, you know, to even get to extra time, whatever, you have to score minimum 4 goals. You don't even get 1.
Yeah. It felt like there was a real lack of urgency, if I'm honest with you. It felt like a real action. Airdrie, in fairness, they did what they needed to do. They sat in deep.
And you can't blame them for that, because we would have done the same.
I would absolutely have done the same. Especially when you've got players like McGill and Gallagher as an out ball. You know, and you've got these players and Smith as well that you mentioned, Lewis. Like, they did what they had to do, and they frustrated us because that's all they need to. That first 20 minutes, we needed a goal. That's the turning point. And you just thought, see when Finn Yeats starts, like that's where the urgency was straight away. And Finn's out at it, and he,
like, you know, 90 seconds on the clock, and he
scraps a shot.
Yeah,
but you know, that's the urgency we need, and it just didn't feel like it. There was too many easy passes. There was too many, again, a problem with Falkirk, a problem with McGuinn's style play is it's just too slow. There's, you look at teams that go back to front really quickly. We are not that team. We fanny about with it here, there and everywhere. Check back, look back. And in a game like that, when you're chasing a 4-goal deficit, you can't look for the easy passes. You've got to look for those balls, and someone's got to take, like you say, leadership and grab the game by the scuff of the neck. And there was no one, probably Max and Finn aside, that was doing that on the park.
Yeah, somebody had a conversation with me at halftime, and they were saying that, you know, Kai Kennedy, they think he's done well since he came into the club. They wouldn't mind seeing him come back. Perhaps the one area they thought he had to work on, but other than a few more shots, because he has that ability, they just want to see more of it, is he's always looking to slow the game down in the final third.
Yeah.
Sometimes, like, that early ball in is what we need, because if you're up against a team like Airdrie, let's be honest, you know they're regimented, they know they're going to be well organised, you know, as I say, Fordyce will attack every high ball going, so your best chance is, before they can get fully organised, get in behind a fullback and whip that ball in. Don't then stop, put your foot on it, turn back, put your foot in it again, turn the other way, stop, put your foot in it, turn back, and then play a square ball.
Yeah,
and if you're going to do all that, just fire in the early cross.
And I don't think when we are looking and we look to go wide quite a lot of the times, we're not playing to Burrell's strengths as well. That's a player that likes to play off the shoulder and get in behind. And we don't play, we've not played to Burrell's strengths at all as a team. You know, and if we're going to play him, you've got to play to the striker's strength, especially when he's just, you know, I mean, fair enough, we had a bit of support on Saturday and Oliver, but Jesus, man. I mean, he had the best chances of the match, arguably. Yeah. The best chance is probably the best chance in the first half. And then shock fucking horror, a long throw into the box, and then Hoddit and Doddit, fuck knows what they're doing. Brad McKay, again, just a lack of communication, bang into each other, and there's fucking McGillity's just tapped the ball into the back of the net.
Yeah, McGill just following it in.
Ridiculous. I mean, criminal defending.
That's what frustrates me, because it's not... And I don't mean this disrespectfully to either Gabby McGill or Airdrie in any way, right? I really don't. I'm not on the wind-up. But that goal, with all due respect to them, is so avoidable. It is ridiculous. It is just, you know, Bobby basics. All that needed to avoid that happening was one person to shout.
Yeah.
One person to say, and to be fair, I believe, speaking to people in the Kevin McAllister stand, that actually Cole Donaldson did shout in his defence. The question is, why did somebody else not listen to him? But that's, I guess...
So, that was it. I mean, that second half, again, Airdrie had done the job. Just, there you go. Up the road.
Yeah.
Easy enough. You know, you're not going to come back from five goals. And it was just watching it. And, you know, it was a sad sight at the final whistle. I mean, because no one gave a, everyone was out, more like 90% of the crowd had left by that point, by the final whistle. And it was a sad, sad indicament of where, going back to the start of the podcast, I said 4 weeks ago, we're all going to sit at the semi-final at Hampden, 10,000 Falkirk supporters, you know, we're on the precipice of getting up, to the championship, and it's a sad indictment that not many people were left there at the end. And I applauded some of the players. I tell you what, I didn't applaud some of them, but certainly the players that I thought had put in the effort, and you know, across the season, your Liam Henderson's, Leon McCann, Finn Yates, when he walked off that part looking really upset, I stayed to applaud them. But there's big questions to be asked, and that again, we'll get into. We're going to do a season review. We'll get into. I'll tell you a wee bit about that in a bit. But just, it was that second half again. It was just, there was no fight, no desire. Fucking, were four goals that, you know, fucking.
You didn't put a glove on them in the final third.
No.
Absolutely. Saying that, four chances in the first half alone.
Yeah.
And this is something that we're talking about.
The one Donaldson missed from 2 yards out just before half time for Jesus Christ. You know what I mean?
No, we don't. Tate, and you know, I think Hendo had a couple of headers, and Tal drew a save from Jameson, the on loan keeper. And it's like, you take even two of those four chances, you get it back to 2-0 at half time. Suddenly, there's bound to be a wee bit of nerves in the Airdrie camp, because you've just done, you know, half the job with half the game still to go.
Exactly, exactly.
And that's why I just feel disappointed you didn't put a glove on them in that final third. It's fine having plenty of possession, but if you're going side to side with no real penetration, and that's all it was. Airdrie just kept their shape really well, to their credit, and they just shuffled left and right. Quite often at points of the game, they dropped an extra man back. So it was, you know, had a man in between midfield and defence, and then laterally at the end of the game, they actually went to a back five to shore things up even more. I don't mind, and I think most, you know, Falkirk fans sometimes get a bad reputation from other fans who say, oh, anytime you get beat, you can't handle it, blah, blah, blah. I disagree with that. I think that Falkirk fans, while they don't like getting beat, no football fan does, I think they can handle it as long as you've had a damn good go at someone.
Yep.
When you go down without putting a glove on someone, that's when they're pissed off. And quite frankly, I think they're perfectly entitled to that.
See, if a miracle happened on Tuesday, we get beat 1-0 at Airdrie, and then we get beat 1-0 and we put up a good fight on Saturday, the supporters are standing around the game to pod that team off, you know, as long as they're giving the fight. And that's all we ask, is fight, desire, urgency. And we've seen none of it. None of it over those two legs. None of it.
6-2 will... And you know what? It's not just the scoreline, John, because I've been standing in the away end at Parkhead watching us getting thumped. I think it was 8-1.
I was there. But there was fighting desire. I remember when Andy Thompson scored that goal, it was like we'd
1-0
won.
1-0 and suddenly it's the comeback is on. 6-1 and the comeback's on. I remember that one. But, you know, Momo Silla scoring that night, for goodness sake.
I know.
But I think the fans just knew, even though it was a kind of second string Celtic team that night, the problem we had was they went out to impress their manager, because he said to them, and he spoke about it afterwards, saying, you know, we should be beating Falkirk easily anyway. Who's looking for a jersey for upcoming games? And, you know, by God, did guys like it was Mo Salah. I think he got a hat-trick that night from a kind of defensive midfielder stroke right back. But where was that same attitude, that desire? Like that night at Parkhead, 8-1's an embarrassment. But it, as you know, you're saying you were there as well, it wasn't a lack of effort. It was simply, it was a gulf in quality. And in football, that will undo you 9 times out of 10. If you're just up against a better team, fine. You don't like it, but you go home licking your wounds and you're like, well, we've been thumped there, but there probably wasn't much more we could have done. Yeah. You're 5-0 down at Airdrie at half-time. I think the reason the fans are pissed off is because every one of them knows more could have been done in that 45 minutes.
There's not a golfing class. In fact, I'd go so far as to say we've got better players than Airdrie, right? Maybe Strikeforce, Callum McGarry.
I think there are some Airdrie players.
There are some good. I mean, there was a lot of players. Reece McCabe, even though he's our manager, as a player, he's a very. And I think we tried to sign him. You know, Callum Gallagher, Callum McGill. These players are really, really good. But I don't think there's a golfing class between the players. Where I think a golfing class is between the tactics and the management of those players. And that, for me, is, you know, again, we've talked about it all season long, is about younger managers, your McCabe's, your McPake's, Bartley. They've all outthought John McGlynn. And I'm sorry, a man that's worked at Celtic, a man that's worked at Hearts in the Premiership, it shouldn't be happening. And I don't know why it constantly happens, and especially in these big games, right? I don't know. Anyway, that being said, let's hear from the manager right now as he caught up with your good self.
John, ultimately a disappointment today. It was always a tall order though, wasn't it?
Unfortunately, yeah. It was a tall order. The damage was done in the game on Tuesday night, but obviously you've got 90 minutes to try and get that back, and it's possible. Airdrie set up with, you know, a low block, no enough space in behind them, and like two really difficult rules, you know, to get through, almost a 4-5-1, and believe it or not, that's difficult to break down, and yet we still had opportunities to do that. Hendo's had a couple of really good headers, or good attempts from headers that probably, you know, could have scored with. Brad's had a great opportunity. Callum Morrison's had a strike that the goalie has managed to save, and these are all in the first half, and potentially could have got us in front, and I think we had to score first. I think we all knew that. I can't fault the players' effort. I thought they put everything into it. But unfortunately, we've come up short. Over the season, I think that the players have done really, really well. I think it's very easy right now. It's raw, and people are not happy. But we have to look back at where we were and what we've done, and, you know, for going back to the very start with the League Cup group, getting through that, and the good night here against Hibs, and then you know, the Scottish Cup run has brought in, you know, finance to the club that the club desperately needs, and the players have been magnificent through that. I don't think we deserve to get these two massive like kicks in the teeth between the semi-final and this. I think we've put so much into the season. Personally feel we deserve to get something out of it, but, you know, unfortunately we've came up short, and we're all gutted and a little bit, you know, bit of a disappointment, and I know the fans are, and we understand that. We've offered so much, and then unfortunately not quite delivered the goods. I mean, we make one mistake in the game, and and Airdrie score. So unfortunately that's been a little bit of an Achilles heel, that we can be in topping games and then somehow, you know, lose a goal with virtually not a lot. And I think next season we'll need to do better. Our goals against Colum's too high. You know, we've seen that Dunfermline have won the league and they're one of the top goal scorers, but they've certainly had the best defensive record, and I think that's...
The signing is out of event management.
It's something that we obviously need to do better at. You know, our goals against us is too high. So, yeah, it's a sore one. Everyone's gutted. That's where we're at.
Sad. I'm sad that is where we're at. We're, you know, looking down the barrel of a 6-2 defeat, and that is where we're at. Or 7-2 defeat, sorry, in aggregate. There's a lot of work to be done, Lewis. There's a lot of work.
Yeah, the squad needs an overhaul this summer.
But the thing is, we've how many times have we overhauled this? Yeah. This, you know, people say it's like madness is doing the same thing again and again, expecting different results, you know, and... It's this is why, you know, and I've been quite critical of John McGlynn over the course of this podcast, but before we get into everyone, the views, the supporters, I think and I'm just going to check Twitter again. Nope, he's not gone yet. I think we've got to stick by him. I really do.
Same, and I'll tell you why.
Well, your reasons are probably the same as mine, Lewis, but fire away, let me know why.
Well, do you know, I was out on Saturday night in town, I had to apologise to my mate, who's not a Falkirk fan. And
oh, Jesus, what a night that was for him.
Half the night, literally, talking to so many different fans coming up and asking, which I always happily chat to all of them. But contract situation aside, there were... people in the background last year who said that to an extent he had restrictions imposed upon him, because when Gary Holt was sporting director, we signed a number of players under him and previous management boards, etc., that meant that John McGlynn couldn't really shape a full squad because he already had a high number of guys on contracts. That's not the case this summer. Well, or at least... he has something like about 12, maybe 13 in contract. But if you're operating with a squad nominally of, say, 22, 23 at a real push, means he's still got 10 that he can now bring in off his own guys, let's say. And I know that some people will counter that and they'll say, well, he signed 17, 18 players this year. He did. Of course he did. But financially, there were certain limitations there. And that ultimately changes what players you can go for. I think what will happen, I think he will stay. I think they will keep him. And don't get me wrong, we've been really harsh on John in this show. And, you know, he said after the game on Tuesday against Airdrie that he gets it. You know, you get a bad defeat, fans are critical. He understands that fully. Over the piece, he has improved us. There have been frustrations. And what really struck me on Saturday night, speaking to so many of the fans, was it was right down the middle.
In the background.
In the past, when there's been undertones for managerial changes, all the rest of it, you kind of get a feel for it quite early, and it'll be one way or the other. Paul Hartley, for example, it was immediately, you know, 99% of people wanted him gone. That wasn't the case on Saturday. It is genuinely split right down the middle at the moment. And the truth is, there's pros and cons. You know, is John perfect? No, of course he's not. He's not Pep Guardiola, but he's done a good job over the piece. And people will say, well, you know, you're going to accept this kind of standard. That's not what it's about. You've had, let's be honest, 4 years where we've just not been at the level we want to be at. And you've had games where, and seasons, the real frustration, nobody expected to just come down into League One and automatically bounce back up like Dunfermline have done. It would have been great if you could do it, but there was an acceptance that you have to earn it. What the fans did expect, and I think it is a realistic expectation, despite what anyone says, you should have been in the playoffs every single year. every single year.
Yeah.
There's no excuse for that club not to finish in those top four positions in League One. The fact that this is the first year we've been in there is a sad story to tell. But yeah, fair play to him, he didn't win it outright. He had the second biggest budget in the league and he came second. So on paper, anybody who's not a Falkirk fan for a second will look at that and say, typically, money, more often than not, and of course there's, like Airdrie are proving against us, they've done more with less of a budget. So that is a counter-argument. There are ways that you can do it, but that's when you've got guys like Callum Gallagher in your team, who is a cracking striker. We would happily take him in our side. The trouble is, of course, with the whole part-time thing, the gulf and the part of the problem we have is we are fishing at the bottom end of the pool for full-time players.
Yeah.
And there are teams like Kelty, Airdrie, whoever you want to mention, who, with some of the money they can pay, are right at the top for the part-time players. And that's where the arguments over hybrids and all that start. But that's a debate for another day. But in terms of John, he has a year on his contract. He has improved us. He was told at the start of the season, get us out the league via winning promotion, or at least get us in those damn playoffs. He had the second biggest budget. He got second. It's difficult, even though we're being harsh, even though we're pissed off, even though we're angry at not making the playoff final at least, it's difficult also to say that it's been a disastrous season. It's been a disappointing one because we're not in the playoff final, but we have got better. And at least I think, and I don't know anything behind the scenes, this is just a personal opinion, I think what will happen is we will stick with him. He will be given the right over the course of the closed season to reshape the squad the way he wants it, with the financial shackles, if you like, now off. And then at that point, you know what? There's no excuse that can be used. So I think what you'll get is you'll get, you know, you look at things a quarter into next season, once you've played every team once. And then if you were having some cataclysmic start to the season, that's when any decision would get made, and at which point the board have a much easier decision to make because there's no excuses left. At the moment, there are some mitigating factors there. It's galling, though, that we're sitting here talking about another year in League One.
Well, at least we get to go to Stirling. There's a brew dog in Stirling, Lewis. So that's.
Wait, you buying for once?
Yeah. But yeah, I get all that. But the thing that I think is going to land, and we'll get into the correspondence from the supporters in a minute, is that you couldn't have got any worse. That was the worst season in Falkirk's history last season. Yes. It was the worst season. Point. What sticks in people's throats is, I think the last 10, since that East End Park game, I'll put it beyond that. See that since that last minute goal against Alloa, that for me was the turning point. Yeah. We were on that great run of one
games, whatever it was. Yep.
Yeah, and we were, we're marching towards contention, and we go to East End Park thing, and if we get a win here, we're right back in it. And that performance at East End Park was worrying.
And I think there needs to be
The worry is that, and I guess this is from Raith Rovers supporters as well, who, watched McGuinn's sides blow it in the big games, when they had that championship decider against Dunfermline, and he made various, tinkered with the team, and he just doesn't seem to be able to handle these big games. I mean, we've had the semi-finals. I mean, air aside, which we probably got a bit lucky there, considering if, they missed that, hit the bar with a penalty. The cup run, when you look at the cup run, it's papered over a lot of cracks, and it's been great for the club financially, don't get me wrong. It's probably saved us from going part-time or into hybrid next season, that. But when you look at the cup run, Wick, Alloa, Darvel, Ayr, and then Inverness, it's great that we got to Hampden, but still, it's kind of papered over the cracks, especially when you look at the 10-game runs. I saw a statistic that someone put out, like, about the last 10 games of Hartley, last 10 games of Miller, and the last 10 games of McKinnon over the last couple of seasons, and John's record in over the last 10 league games, 4 defeats, 4 draws, and 3 wins, matches up with a lot of the teams. Players we got Sheeran, 4 defeats, 3 draws, 3 wins. Cracks and Miller, 5 defeats, 2 draws, 3 wins. You know, it's that's on a par.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what's happened in between from that mid-season team that were flying, and then what happened at East End Park. It was like confidence is deflation, and that's the worry. I guess that's the big worry. But as you say, Lewis, the support are completely split on this. Absolutely split. What needs to happen now, however, we know we're sitting here on a Monday, right? If John McGlynn was going, we would have heard about it by now. Would have heard about it. It would have been Saturday night. It would have been today, right? We're sitting here Monday. We've not heard anything from the board. What we need to hear from the board, and it's all very well coming out, you know, and asking for money and all this and putting out statements and, you know, support team. What we need to hear from the board now and what supporters need to hear from the board is what's the plan? Why is McGlynn staying? If so, let us know. Put out a statement now saying we are fully behind John McGlynn. This is the plans for next season, blah, blah. That statement needs to, it's maybe I'm, you know, it needs to come out this week.
I would say, John, just to counter that, and I get why you're saying that, and I think most fans will want some kind of clarity as well. You can't really put a statement out saying we're sticking with this manager when the manager's already under contract for next year.
Well,
the assumption is he is as under contract unless you choose to break that and terminate things.
Yeah. But there needs to be some sort of clarification from the board this week. They've been very good with their communication. There needs to be some, because as you say, Lewis, the support is 50-50 down the middle of these days. Let's read some of the from some of the listeners what they're saying. Jamie out there in the States says, let's see and who gets in. And remember, we got a semi-final and got to the playoffs with some players that were underachievers. Also remember all the crap with Burrow and fans calling for him to start because he was coming off the bench to score a late winner. So he started him and he was found out just how dire he really was. Oh, well, we are fans, not managers. I think I would rather be a politician than a footy manager. A lot of people think the cash is a bottomless pit and we can handpick who we want. Let's see this one through and stop calling for his head already. We're hurting more because he gave us more hope than we've had since Hoostie left. We're in the playoffs this year. When was the last time we got that far? And we're in the Scottish Cup semi. When was the last time we were in a good cup run? Achieve more than we expected. And so, come on, you Bears. That's what Jamie says. So again, pro McGlynn. Joe, the biggest problem this season has been McGlynn not knowing or sticking with his best team. I'd like to see stats on how many different starting 11s we've had. I would like to see that too. You cannot expect a consistent season when you change the system and players constantly. We had the players to go up. So probably anti-McGlynn in that thing.
John. I think that goes back to the original transfer point. When, you know, you inherit a squad from like the Gary Deans, Gary Holt era, and you're already told, by the way, you've got like 18, 19 players you can sign for. You're very much inheriting.
Yeah.
This summer, that is no longer the case. You can now reshape the squad any way he wants. I get the argument there that, yeah, okay, maybe could he have got more out of certain players? Possibly. But I think over the piece at that, he actually did quite a good job, because look at Leon McCann last year, for example, and look at Aidan Nesbitt, right? Nizzy, and I'll happily chat this to, I wouldn't say anything to you now that I wouldn't say to him. Last year, Nizzy frustrated the hell out of me.
Chicken or fish?
Because there was no doubt in his ability, right? But the end product wasn't for me there.
No.
He would beat a man and then he wouldn't find that final pass, that shot, that cross, the final, whatever it happened to be. This year, certainly for about three quarters of the season, he was up there as arguably the highest assists in the entire league. So whether you do or don't rate Aidan Nesbitt for a second, that's irrelevant. What you can see under different stewardship and different management, his game massively raised. Leon McCann, who last year was kind of average-looking defender, wasn't brilliant, wasn't horrific, just right in the middle. This year, again, has massively improved. Now, the only thing that's different is the coaching and the management.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, at least that's shown he can get better out of some players. Now, he's not going to get better out of every single player. And some of that will be bearing in mind that some guys might just be at their limitations. They might not be able to give you anymore because of the level that they're at, with all due respect. And equally, you know, I think there will be changes. For example, I think if John had had his way last summer, he would have brought in another centre half. And I fully expect that's what he'll do this summer. I think
need an experienced centre half. See,
I think Paul Donaldson will stay, he'll play. And I think you'll see another centre half come in who will, and I don't know who's staying, who's not. And obviously, there's different situations with contracts, but Sean Mackey can play in there if you need him to. You've got Brad McKay, you've got Paul Watson. I think you'll see a new centre half come in that will start ahead of all of them, and they'll partner Cole Donaldson.
Yeah.
And then at least, well, you'll soon find out if the answer's there.
Yeah.
Because he's now got the man he wants. He's doing it his way. But an overhaul needs to happen. And it's just disappointing the way that the season ended. But I get there's a couple of good points that the fans are making there around, you know, you look back at Hoosty and there are certain people who were calling for him to go. And you look back at it now and it's been the start of our decline.
Absolutely.
Now, John's an old school manager. He is the closest thing to Peter Houston we've had since Hoosty left.
Yeah.
And yeah, Jamie makes a good point. You know, we have had more this year. We've had a cup semi-final. Let's be honest. There's no one of us that goes to these games regularly thought we were getting anywhere near Hampden this year. Unless it was something to do with playing Queen's Park in the Challenge Cup or whatever. There's no way.
And but again, we
it was an easy route.
It was an easy run.
I get it. But, you know, playoffs, we're in the playoffs. I think, for me, John stays. I think he gets the summer to revamp the squad, and then you can make an honest assessment next year. Mm. And if, it, you know, if the worst happens and it doesn't work out, then at least all these kind of things that can be used as an excuse at the moment, whether it's financial, whether it's squad limitations, whether it's the fact the fan base are split, whether they say, oh, we don't want to keep chopping and changing every other season, all these excuses that can be used right now as we sit here, every one of them falls by the wayside. There's no excuses left come the end of September, mid-October, when you've had that first quarter of games.
Well, I mean, the thing is, and I guess a lot of supporters will be asking, what for, you know, what, say, I don't know, Hamilton come down. Queen of the South, I think, are going to be a big challenge next season. What if we're, you know, behind by, say, 8 points, 9 points at that point? I mean, that's going to be the big questions there. Let's continue with the listeners. Say Marshall needs to win. Marshall says, need to win, but play one up top. Play at a pedestrian pace when should be looking to get forward at pace. McGuinn had no idea how to set up a team and far too slow to make changes, as was the case on Tuesday. He must be sacked. Matthew, we're shocking when we looked like we had a lifeline on Tuesday. We chucked it away again. And today, for a team that need to score, we're so wasteful. But for me, sacking McGuinn is not the answer. We have progressed from where we were, and with more signings, could be promising. Stu says, keep McGuinn. Trying to rebuild all over again every season is what's killing us. Base of a good team is there. Just need to sort out things at the back and be clinical up front. Not happy with the way the season panned out, but will not help to start again from scratch with a new manager. Ali, we were worked out months ago. Don't even think about it. Teams don't even have to think about how to hurt us. Tactically, we are completely inept. Is that to do with the squad makeup or managerial ineptitude? Terrified and convinced it's the latter. So there you go. As an art mark against the McGuinn camp there. Again, like you say, split. Jim, players in the last few weeks have been shocking, but the manager is in charge of tactics. Clearly hasn't worked, but he kept persevering. Buck stops at him. Players play the system they are told to. David, McGuinn has steadied the ship, but he has taken us as far as he can. Do we want more of the same next season? Play doing defensives, holding midfielders and one up top? The Falkirk I grew up watching wasn't afraid to have a go at any team, especially at home. For me, that needs to change next season as well. Sitting with two at the stadium, that should, you know, that we shouldn't be sitting with two in front of the defence at the stadium.
Falkirk fans, as long as I've known John, pretty much hate any formation that involves one up front. Let's just say it, they do.
Yeah, of course.
As a fan base, they despise one up front. I get the fact that some guys say, oh, well, because it's a 4-2-3-1, it's really four up front or three up front. The two, no, it's no. It's one up front and three in behind. And that's how the fans interpret it. You know, I was brought up on two strikers. I personally prefer two strikers. I fully get why the fans are frustrated with that. John has a system that he believes in. He's used that since his Wraith Rovers days. He used it, you know, speaking to four or five of their season ticket holders that I know through the Scotland games. They all say he stuck by that formation religiously there. That was his shape. He, don't get me wrong, it did change occasionally, but most of the time, that's what he went with. But I think you're going to have to make changes next year. So you've got question marks over whether Romain Borrell stays. I think he'll have plenty offers, put it that way.
He'll be gone.
And I think they'll come from a higher level. You've got Jordan Allen on the books as a recognised out-and-out striker.
I think Jordan's got to play with him.
He needs a big, lumbering, Brian Graham-type player behind it. We need a Davy Nicholls for midfield. We need a Brian Graham for up front. We need a really commanding...
A Yogi Hughes for centre-half.
A commanding centre-half, yeah. Exactly. A Yogi Hughes. Dare I even say it? An old Darren Dodds, an old head like that.
Yep, and you know what? Dan did a great job when he was in, yep.
And he would just, you know, remember Murray Wallace credits a lot of his early progression to the fact that he had Darren Dodds beside him. So for me, it's just right down that spine. Go and find a Brian Graham type striker. Go and find a Davy Nicholls type solid midfielder who'll damn well put the boot in when you have to, but can play a bit. Go and get the commanding centre half. Oh, and by the way, you need somebody at right back and an experienced keeper. Is that spine for me, and build the rest around them?
Absolutely 100% agree with that, Lewis. Craig says Brad McKay is pathetic. Totally lowered Donaldson's performance him next to him. Donaldson had a good season up until the Dunfermline game. Losing 7-2 in two games against Airdrie is not acceptable in any way, shape, or form. Dougie says, I knew Airdrie was going to be tough, but come on to the tie, it was after 45 minutes. We might have won the second quarter, but other than that, we offered nothing. Not sure what is the correct thing to do regarding McGuinn. So undecided from Dougie. And proven it last season, but too often he's got it wrong. Ryan, absolutely gutless performance by any measure. Far too passive. Too much side-to-side meaningless passing. No one in the box when we did attack. The defence is an absolute disaster. We look like a mid-table, low-end league side. Harsh. Grant, utter shite all across the park. Can't defend, can't score, and we need to gut the whole squad because next season we have to get promoted. Is missing out on promotion even through the playoffs and facing another season League One is unacceptable and simply not good enough. Darryl, 3 wins in our last 10 games, chopping and changing formations, personnel, leaking goals constantly, no plan B, playoffs finished within 10 minutes. Honestly, I'd rather finish 5th than watch that game again. Easily the worst I've ever seen. Cup run papered over what was. And Davey finishes up saying, spineless, half-hearted performance, McGlynn out. He's still here. I've just checked Twitter. He's still here. Next week, we are going to have a season review, and I think there's a lot of questions that are going to be asked. We're going to look at the highlights, because there have been highlights. Let's look over it. There have been highlights. You cast your mind back to the Hibs game, that wonderful night against Ayr, you know, getting to Hampden. You know, there's been some highlights along the way, some players that have stood out along the way. So we're going to talk about highlights. We're going to talk about the lowlights next week as we review the season. We're going to talk about recruitment, the players that we need to bring in. What are the threats going to be next season? Where are they going to come from? I mean, we'll have a clearer picture of who we're playing at the moment. We know the cover down. We know that it's either going to be Clyde or Annan. We know it's going to be either Hamilton or Airdrie, I suspect, and I hope it's Hamilton to come down rather than having Airdrie again. Don't say that. You never know with Airdrie, you know, if McCabe leaves or if the you know, the recruitment and people come and nab their players. We'll wait and see. But we thought that's what would happen with Airdrie this season, and they've kept on this season.
They did well to keep that squad together. They did really well.
they've done really well. We'll ask what needs to happen with Falkirk, and we'll obviously ask the question about John McGlynn as well. That's all to come on next week's show as we do a season review. I will also have a very special podcast with Jamie Swinney. We're going to speak to the CEO of Falkirk. We're going to put your questions to Jamie as well, because I think there's a lot of questions need to be asked, and I'm sure Jamie should be able to provide the answers. So we're going to do two specials next week, and that'll be it for the season. But listen, we would love to hear from you. If you want to come on next season as a guest pundit, we've already got our guest pundits for next week. It's going to be a bit of a rammy next week with some of our former guest pundits joining us, but if you want to do that next season, drop us a DM on Twitter or Facebook, or you can email us at falkirk@falkirkdaft.co.uk.
This is Falkirk Daft.
We asked last week on the show, Lewis, for your Falkirk Daft Player of the Year. It's been a tough week to vote on it, I'll be honest with you. It's been a very tough week. But from your shortlist, remember, we narrowed it down to four players, right? Those four players were Stephen McGinn, Leon McCann, Kai Kennedy, and Liam Henderson. Big shock that Callum Morrison wasn't in those four players. But that's the four that you gave to us. That's the four that were shortlisted. We asked you to vote on it. And the final votes are in. Lewis, here we go.
Okay.
The Falkirk Daft Trophy will be on its way to these one of these players. In fourth place, it was Big Hendo, Liam Henderson, 17% of the vote. In third place, it was the captain, Stephen McGinn, with 20.2% of the vote. So it's between Leon McCann and Kai Kennedy. If I could have a drum roll, please. The inaugural winner of the Falkirk Daft Player of the Year is, let's do my Dermot Weary thing here. Pause.
Get on with you, come on.
Kai Kennedy with 32.5% of the vote, narrowly beating Leon McCann, who had 30.2% of the vote. So Kai's kind of turn of the year form has got him Falkirk Daft Player of the Year. Well done, Kai. The trophy will get it to you somehow, and we'll pop it in the post, or we'll come and meet you and give you the very unique Falkirk Daft trophy, which we'll show you on next week's show once I've actually got it ordered and it's come through. So well done, Kai Kennedy, and I go again, thanks for your work on the field. A lot of good goals, and we'll always have that goal against Ayr and to get to the semis. So thank you very much to Kai for that. And that is it for this week's Falkirk Daft. We've went a long time. There's been a lot to get off our chest, Lewis.
Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks of frustration, let's be honest.
It's been quite cathartic, actually. I've needed
just, you know, not the end of the season that any of us hoped for. And you just keep hoping that, you know, there's a wee bit of light at the end of the tunnel, John, because I don't know about you, but I'm sick of thinking there's a wee bit of light at the end of the tunnel, and then it turns out it's the express train coming the other way. And this week that was Airdrie, and fair play to them, because you know, they as much as I don't like to say it, but I have to, they thoroughly deserved it.
Yeah,
and it'll be interesting to see if it's going to be them or Hamilton, and if they play.
Who would you prefer down the league? My thoughts is that if Hamilton come down, they may implode. That's my initial thoughts, but I don't know the club well enough. I know certainly my friend's wee boy plays for Hamilton in the youth setup there, and obviously got a very good youth setup there. But my feelings is they've got a lot of young players in that team, and this league is as we've seen it, it's a hard physical league.
Yeah, I'd probably have to lean that way as well, because I appreciate they might have a little bit more finances in Airdrie, but I think a lot of Airdrie's strength is the fact that they've kept that squad together for about 4 years solid now. Yeah. And that's why Montrose had been so strong as well, keeping their squad together. And it was only when Montrose started to lose a couple of guys that they weren't as strong this year. Yeah. Now, if that happened with Airdrie, if Airdrie didn't go up and they lost, say, Gallagher, McGill, Fordy, whoever it happens to be, then okay, you think, well, we would take that, but that's not a guarantee. It's not a given.
No.
If Airdrie were to now be out the league, you're looking at a team that has been together for 3-4 years, a solid unit, no longer there. And I just feel that Hamilton coming down, there's some boys that wouldn't be prepared to play in League One. They would all leave. There's some guys contractually that maybe couldn't persuade them to stay. Some that might have relegation release clauses, all these kind of things. And there would probably be a higher level of turnover at Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And any time you have that, it takes you time to
transition
bend.
Season.
Exactly, yeah. That transition period.
Seattle Queen of the South this season, for example, they've had that transition season. And
it took Queen's 5.5 months to get going this year.
Yeah.
After Christmas, they were great. Up to Christmas, due respect, they weren't really how their fans would have hoped. And I think, yeah, Hamilton may suffer some of the same. So if I had to choose one, I would probably rather be playing Hamilton than Airdrie.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens over the next week. We'll be doing, like I say, a season review, and we'll be looking at next season and, you know, the threats and who's going to be our, you know, who are we going to be up against next season as well. It's going to be a really interesting chat next season with some of our former guest pundits. So looking forward to that. Wish we were still doing another Falkirk Daft saying that we got promoted, mind you, but hey ho. Yeah. There we go. Listen, thanks very much for listening to this week's Falkirk Daft. Get us on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that jazz. Get in touch with us, please. Just email Ross or John at falkirkdaft.co.uk. And as ever, you can check out our merch. Head to merch.falkirkdaft.co.uk if you want, or see our full range. And thank you for someone who sent in, I've not got your name, but they sent us in a picture of them dog with the dog bandana, which they purchased. Yay, the dog bandana. Buy yours at merch.falkirkdaft.co.uk.
Can the dog play right back? Asking for a friend.
Right, okay. We'll check into that. Always thanks as ever for your company. Really appreciate you jumping in and substituting in for Mr. Wayne, who will hopefully be back next week as we do our season review. That's it. Thank you very much. Expect the unexpected, though. I'm fed up of that thing. It's at the moment, it's expect the expected. And Lewis, leave us with your catchphrase for one final time for the season.
Well, as always, thanks for your time.